It's the Rokan Show right here, 720 WGN. Mr. Richard Roper is here. We got a couple movies that we're going to review for the weekend, that you're going to review for the weekend. And then Adam Carolla is going to join us. Adam Carolla's got a documentary out, right, along with Dennis Prager, the conservative talk show host.
Right.
And it's looking at, well, it's called, I mean, it's in the title. It's one of those things that explains it. No Safe Spaces. And it's about the whole idea, especially on college campuses, of that kids don't want to be confronted with thoughts or ideas that disagree with their own principle.
Yes, it's a fascinating film. I recommended it last week. We talked about it. I can't wait to talk to Adam more about this, because here you have mostly liberal kids on college campuses talking about tolerance and free speech, except for when they disagree with it. Then you shouldn't come near our campus because I feel triggered. And, you know, I also want to talk, we're going to talk in a little bit about Richard Jewell, but also the controversy out there about the way it portrays the media. Because you know who has really thin skin when it comes to criticism? Those of us who critique others. The media. We're sometimes some of the worst. Like, hey, wait a minute now.
We can talk about you.
Wait, just a minute. But first of all, I want to talk about Jumanji 2, okay. Next Level, which will do, you know, big box office. Now, this is actually the fourth Jumanji film, because there was Jumanji with Robin Williams in the 90s, and then there was also John Favreau did one. But then there was the Jumanji of a couple of years ago.
Right.
So it's kind of the sequel to that. So people don't know the story. It's basically like a bunch of high schoolers find an old 1990s video game console in a school. They're in a Breakfast Club type detention setting. That was in the one from a couple of years ago. And they put it back together, but it's kind of screwed up, and somehow they enter the game. So the kids have their own avatars within the game. So that's how you see Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Kevin Hart and Jack Black. They are the fill-ins for the kids. So this is basically what happens in the second film, Next Level. Now the kids are in college. One of them decides, let's put the game back together. The added twist is that Danny DeVito is the grandpa of one of the kids. He comes to visit, and he ends up inside the video game. And his best friend, who's estranged from Danny Glover, also enters the game. But that now gives the opportunity for Dwayne Johnson to play a character who looks like The Rock but talks like Danny DeVito, because it's Danny DeVito inside the guy going like, look, I can move my hips again. And Kevin Hart has the Danny Glover character. And then Awkwafina at one point is the avatar for Danny DeVito. And Awkwafina, who's so great in a movie called The Farewell, mm-hmm. which we're featuring in one of our podcasts, Awkwafina portraying the avatar for Danny DeVito is brilliant acting. Because she's Awkwafina, but you could see Danny DeVito in her performance. So that's kind of the fun stuff for the adults watching and for the actors to get to play this, because then they'll do some body switching. For kids, if you're super young, it's a little intense. It's just a fun adventure in the, you know, it's a video game.
So you like it.
Your avatar. So I'm giving it 3 stars.
What?
Jumanji 2, Next Level. I like that it's kind of a good old-fashioned adventure. I mean, it has, you know, cutting-edge special effects. But they're all, you know, they're all trapped in this world where they get 3 lives. If not, they'll never be able to get out of the video game. And they must, you know, gain possession of the Master Stone from, you know, Jimmy the Terrible or whoever the villain is. And it's just all about that, you know, running away from baboons. And then they get it. And actually, it's finally the movie. I've always said that giant ostriches would make for great, scary creatures. And this movie has
giant
a herd
ostriches.
Of giant ostriches chasing them through the desert.
This was your idea?
I don't think they took my idea, but they proved my theory. It's fun.
I would have never thought of that.
I don't know why you did. Jack Black, Dwayne Johnson, Kevin Hart, Danny DeVito, Danny Glover. The acting is, you know, it's kind of next level. That's why it's Jumanji right. 2 Next Level. Pure fun. Pure fun at the movies, bro.
I like that. And it's... Because the original Jumanji, I never saw the Kevin Hart Jumanji, the second one.
The one from a couple years ago. And it turned out to be a big hit, as you can see. And it's a real crowd pleaser. I think it's just about the same.
Okay.
It's a real crowd pleaser, and it plays well internationally. It also plays well at home. It's one you could put on. You can kind of go in and out of the room. You're like, oh, what's happening now? Well, now Jack Black, it's a woman. So he's kind of playing it with kind of, you know, the fun gestures and stuff like that. And you don't really need a scorecard to keep up with it. You kind of get the idea.
Okay, wait. So this is not...
And they all like, learn and grow.
My conversation with Andre, you don't have to worry about that.
No.
Or the dinner.
My dinner with Andre, no. Yeah. It's not Terrence Malick, you know. It's fun. It's a fun. They used to call them popcorn movies, bro.
Right.
Get some popcorn
all right.
and sit down and shut up and watch the movie. for 2 hours.
Although you can't talk. This, would this movie encourage screen talking?
No, because, well, a little bit, because there are a few moments where like, no, wait a minute. Because like at one point, they get into this kind of pool that's filled with sort of magical stuff, and all of a sudden, they've all switched. So now Dwayne Johnson's got another person inside him. So occasionally, you do need a scorecard.
Okay.
But mostly fun.
All right. On the other side, we're going to talk about Richard Jewell. This is the movie that has sparked all kinds of controversy.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of controversy. And now it's because it's found its way into the whole like conservative versus liberal media bloodstream.
Yes.
For reasons that don't seem to really be related to the film itself. So
we'll talk about it.
Okay.
We'll talk about it.
So we'll talk about that. And Adam Carolla joins us after 6:30 tonight as well. So stay right here. Right now, Jen DeSalvo tells us what's happening on the roads and in the skies.
Family Classics is back on WGN-TV. Watch a Family Classics presentation of the Irving Berlin Classic Holiday Inn Friday night at 7 on WGN-TV.
Richard, you're a national hero now.
Thank you, sir. But I was just doing my job.
You always look at the guy who found the bomb just like you always look at the guy who found the body.
Jewel fits the profile of the lone bomber. A frustrated white man who is a police wannabe who seeks to become a hero.
We're running it.
All right, that is the Richard Jewell movie, the Clint Eastwood directed film. This is Clint Eastwood's like 30-something film that he's
at least, yeah. I mean, just in the last decade, he's probably done 8 films, and he's 89 years old, Clint Eastwood.
Right, almost going to be 90, and amazing. So there's controversy, though, surrounding this film, because it's a pretty wide-open-eyed look at exactly what went right and what went wrong there with poor Richard Jewell, who was accused of being the Atlanta Olympics bomber. And because he fit a profile of kind of a loner.
Yes,
and
exactly. And a well, it was the bombing at what they called the Centennial Olympic Park in 1996. Right. You and I were, among the many, many, many thousands of radio and print people who were talking and writing about it at the time. And, this is 5 years before 9/11. There had been some bombings, but it was still, extremely unusual and different kind of story. And Richard Jewell was and he was kind of, he was kind of a wannabe copper. He had been a campus security guard and had been fired from that job because he was pulling people over on the streets and giving them traffic tickets, which he had no right to do. And he, he'd gotten in a couple of problems like that. He kept talking about how he wanted to be a cop. He was in his early 30s. And he, he was an easy target in a lot of ways, heavy set, and he kept trying to buddy up to the real cops. But he was a security guard at the park, and he did spot a backpack that he thought was suspicious, and the cops kind of went, okay, fine, Richard, and he alerted the FBI, and then they realized that it was a bomb. And he saved lives because he started clearing people out before they even realized it was a bomb. And then it went off, and 2 people were killed and about 100 were injured, but it could have been worse.
Yeah.
Hailed as a hero. And as you saw in that clip there, John Hamm, as the FBI agent, saying, that's always the first person you look at. It's very, it's a very common thing. As this film points out, and I think Clint Eastwood does an amazing job. First of all, the recreation of what happens at the Olympic Park is harrowing and amazing. It's like when he did Sully, and you just believe that you were watching that plane crashing on the Hudson. He is a old-school director who makes great use of modern technology. American Sniper, 1517 to Paris. He does all these stories about Americans who are thrust into certain circumstances and are either hailed as heroes or, in this case, pillaged. So in this story, Paul Walter Hauser, who bears a remarkable resemblance to Richard Jewell, but is also a great actor, plays Richard Jewell. And within a couple of days, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution was the first newspaper that they broke the story that he was a person of interest. He'd already been hailed as a hero. He'd already been on the Today Show with Katie Couric and Brian Gumbel, on Nightline, on front page of everywhere, President Clinton praising him. And then that story broke, and it became an even bigger story. And the media ran with it. As this film points out, Rowan, I know there are a lot of journalists who are upset with this because Olivia Wilde plays an actual journalist for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution who broke the story. And she has also passed away. Richard Jewell has as well. So she's not here to defend herself. And in the movie, there's a scene where it looks like she's offering to sleep with John Hamm's FBI agent in exchange for information. And she runs with it. There's no evidence that actually happened. But, things like this happen in the movies. I will say this, though. Yes, it was fake news, but I would defend her as a reporter. When an FBI agent who's the lead investigator on a case tells you, we're looking at Richard Jewell, and says, don't quote me by name, but that's the truth, you're going to run with that story.
Right. Well, it is often that the FBI does do that intentionally. They leak. Law enforcement agencies all over the country do that. They leak information because they want to start spinning the ball in a direction that's going to loosen people up, right, or make people run so that they get a sense of who they're actually trying to get. And here's the thing that is driving me batty about this controversy, is that somehow now in our media grievance world that we all have to live in, you've got people rushing to the defense of the Atlantic Journal Constitution, and the Atlantic Journal Constitution, they themselves, right, that mm-hmm. newsroom has, you know, thrust itself into the story and trying to defend this reporter. And then you've got I know that Fox and Friends, for example, had been, you know, sort of chewing on this story. Mm-hmm. And one of the other Fox guys, Jesse Waters, just said, well, this happens all the time. Women sleep with female reporters, sleep with sources all the time to get the story. And I don't know that to be true. And I've been in this business longer than Jesse Waters has been in this business. I think that that's... I can't believe that now that's what we've got. Now we're going to argue about that.
I would, you know, I'd say to our friends at Fox and Friends and Fox News, there's what we call a bombshell coming out in 2 weeks that does not portray the Fox newsroom in the exact most flattering light, because it has the story of Megyn Kelly and Gretchen Carlson and other women at Fox News Channel, and John Lithgow plays Roger Ailes, and we'll get into that when it comes out. I will say this, you know, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution was one of the main news organizations that did not settle with Richard Jewell, because they stood by the reporting they put out there, saying at the time this was, you know, it wasn't... They didn't say he did it.
They said
Other news organizations settled with him because, you know, it seemed like they had gone out of their way. I think is this film... First of all, I'm giving this film 3.5 stars. I think there are a few moments that are a little bit over the top, but I would urge people to see it because it is a more complex portrayal of it than simply showing the Olivia Wilde character. There's more to her character in this than just that one scene. And she ultimately, I think, is portrayed in a sympathetic light. It's interesting, too, because Olivia Wilde in real life, her parents are both a famous international journalist. She grew up in a journalism family. Both her folks have done, you know, everything, all kinds of investigative pieces, you know, as good as you can get. The other performances that are amazing in this film, we talk a lot about Sam Rockwell, who's giving, you know, gets a supporting actor nomination almost as often as Meryl Streep gets lead actress. And he plays the attorney who represented Richard Jewell. It was an interesting case, too, because he was a guy who was kind of in over his head. And he would go on shows sometimes and find out about information that he didn't even know about. And then Kathy Bates plays Richard Jewell's mother.
She's
great. She should get a supporting actress nomination because, you know, he was a 34-year-old guy who was living at home with mom. They only had each other. And she, you know, her life was ruined, and she saw her boy's life ruined, especially because all he ever wanted to do was be a copper.
Right.
And he was so complacent, and took a long time before he stood up to the FBI because he wanted to help them. And he didn't realize at first that, listen, you're the guy they're looking at. They actually had him talking to a tape recorder and say what the bomber said. They're saying, well, we're just doing this for a training video. And the other thing the film points out is both the FBI and the media, when the facts didn't add up, you know, the math didn't add up, there was a phone call placed from about 8 minutes away from the bombing scene, and Richard Jewell was at the bombing scene. There was no way, everybody walked it off and said, well, there's no way he could have made the call. The FBI said, well, he could have had an accomplice. They just would then, you know, switch the narrative for far too long mm-hmm. before they finally exonerated. And it was 6 years before the actual bomber was caught.
Eric Robert Rudolph, right?
And confessed to it. I mean, by that point, Richard Jewell had been exonerated. You know, the FBI had taken the unusual step of actually releasing a letter saying he's no longer the subject of an investigation. But they didn't call a press conference. You know, they sent a letter out.
And that guy, they found him like in a shack, right?
Yep.
I think in North Carolina in the Smoky Mountains or somewhere. And he had been involved in other, like, abortion clinic bombings and things like that.
Yeah, and I'd actually gone up in the mountains somewhere in Georgia. I mean, the truth is they weren't looking at him. They put all their, you know, efforts on Richard Jewell. It was like 6 weeks after the Olympics before they finally exonerated him. And a lot of the media and, of course, the world's attention had gone elsewhere. To this day, people are like, oh, that was the guy. You know, they think of him as the Olympic bomber. He was not. And I think this film actually, it's an important film because, you know, it does help to clear his name and set the record straight. And it's a cautionary tale. It's not some one-sided attack on journalism. People will see the film, they can decide for themselves. It's a really good film. Clint Eastwood's amazing.
Yes, he is. At everything he's ever done in the cinematic arts, whether he's an actor or director, he's got that. And also the stories that he chooses to tell.
Yeah.
He finds things that really kind of cut to the grit of the American experience.
If you look at, right, exactly. The 1517 to Paris was about the three off duty, I believe, American military guys who stopped a guy who was trying to do a terrorist attack on the train, the 1517 to Paris. Sully, of course, was the story of a pilot close to retirement who became a hero. And American Sniper, the story of Chris Kyle. You know, so he's taken a lot of these kind of real life stories and give, you know, shined a different kind of light on them. And those all are, you know, especially American Sniper. And then this one. Well, Sully's a great film, too, honestly. I mean, these are all.
Yeah.
3.5, 4-star films.
Okay, so people should see this. And
Richard Jewell is the film.
We should, we in the media business should stop chewing on this story because we're getting it all wrong anyway. Even our own criticism of it, we're getting it all wrong. And I think that what has happened with the memory of this woman, this reporter, is like another crazy thing too. Because she's, as you pointed out, she's passed away. She can't defend herself.
Yeah, and she had a lot of problems, and you know, some of her colleagues say a lot of it was because of how, you know, the repercussions from being the person who broke the story. But this movie is not about a reporter who promises to sleep with a source in order to get a story. That's 45 seconds in a 2-hour movie.
Got it. All right. Coming up, Adam Carolla is going to join us. He's got a documentary out. It's called No Safe Spaces. He did it with Dennis Prager, who's a conservative talk show host, about the college movement of unless you completely agree with me, you're not allowed on the campus, and you can't disagree with me because you're triggering me and you're making me feel uncomfortable.
Fascinating film.
You like that as well. You've already reviewed
it. Yeah, I gave that a positive review. We talked about it on last week's show. It's playing in theaters, and Adam will have all the details. That guy, he knows how to work all that stuff.
They're going to be at the Park West Theater. I think they're going
to. Not
around.
If I have my say, they won't. Not if I get in there.
Adam's going to be at the Park West Theater on January 25th.
Oh, good.
Right? And they're showing the movie, right? Then he's doing like a Q&A. Is that right?
Yeah, they've been doing on tour. He loves playing the park. Every time Adam comes to town, he tries to play the Park West.
Okay. So he's just doing a comedy thing? I don't know. It's unclear based on the.
He might drive one of his cars on stage. You don't know. He's got, he's got Walter Payton's race car, Paul Newman's race cars in his collection.
It worked out for him, didn't it?
Yeah.
Whatever happened to that guy that he worked with on
The
Man Show?
The Man Show? I don't
Kimmel.
Know.
Kimmel. What was that guy's name? Kimmel?
I don't know. He kind of decided to do his own thing.
All right. We'll talk to Adam Carolla coming up. And also, we have, there are a couple other movies, too, that Richard wants to mention as well. Mel Brooks, Make a Noise. So we'll talk about that as well. But first, let's check in now to the WGN Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, and here we go with Kim Gordon. That's the Rokan Show. Here's Richard Roper. You are just want to recap for you very quickly here. Jumanji 2, you gave that 3 stars.
Next Level. That's I think they lost an opportunity, missed an opportunity, because it should have been Jumanji 2 Electric Boogaloo. That just seems like it was waiting to be used, but.
And then Richard Jewell, 3.5 stars.
Yeah, excellent film with brilliant performances. And Clint Eastwood, you know, if you just took the movies he directed, never took any of the movies he starred in, he would be a Hall of Fame contributor to Hollywood lore, going all the way back to Play Misty for Me through all the other films he's done over the years.
You know, it's a funny thing. Play Misty for Me was about a radio personality. Yeah. Yes. And I saw it as a little kid, and I thought, wow, how cool. Because he got the radio part right, like with the carts and the whole thing, like what music radio was like back then. And he, but it was a guy who decides, a DJ, who decides he wants to run off with one of his callers.
Yeah, and you know, he had a beautiful romance going with Donna Mills. Remember her?
Mm-hmm.
To The First Time I Ever Saw Your Face by Roberta Flack is in that movie. And then he ends up with the woman who wound up being the matriarch in Arrested Development. Jessica Walter. She was the stalker.
So, yes.
I believe it's the same character that she eventually just, you know, got to know the Bluth family.
Very, very great. All right. We're going to have Adam Carolla coming on here in a few minutes. But before we do that, Mel Brooks Unwrapped. There's an HBO doc.
Yeah, and this is really fun. I'm giving this one 3.5 stars because it's a Mel Brooks documentary. It's about him. The conceit here is there's this guy from the BBC, a real-life guy, who started interviewing him, I guess, like around 30 years ago. And the way they make the movie is if he never finished the interview, which he actually does. So they just have all these, you know, so like cut to present day and the guy's still waiting in the office for Mel Brooks, who's still in the same office. But it's really just an opportunity for Mel Brooks to tell stories. He's one of the great storytellers of all time and also one of the great creators of all time, whether we're talking about Young Frankenstein, Blazing Saddles, The Producers, and then The Producers on Broadway.
Get Smart.
Get Smart, going all the way back to Your Show of Shows. So right. I think we have just a little bit here of Mel Brooks talking about his style.
My anxiety, the producers, all my films are serious. They're not dramatic. That's the difference. Blazing Saddles is all about racial prejudice. And I figured, well, I'm out of show business, so I flung myself into the Netherland. No, that's Holland. Into the netherworld.
But, you know, there's even in the humor there, he's right. I mean, his films are comedies, but he says it doesn't mean they're not serious because right. they would lampoon. I mean, The Producers is, you know, Springtime for Hitler is not a real tribute to Hitler.
You know, all right, we've talked about this. This has come up again. And when we talked to Adam Carolla about his No Safe Spaces movie,
it kind of fits in with that.
It fits into the whole idea.
That, yeah.
What kind of movie can you make today without creating a snowfall of snowflakes on either side, by the way? I happen to think that there's snowflakes on
absolutely
both sides.
True. Well, Todd Phillips, that's why Todd Phillips made Joker with Joaquin Phoenix. Todd Phillips, who did the Hangover movies and things like that, because he felt that he had been painted into a corner and couldn't do the type of humor that he liked to do, which is politically incorrect humor. And you know, the makers of Jojo Rabbit, which is about a kid who has Hitler as an imaginary friend, would beg to differ, but it's definitely a concern.
Yes. So you think about when Blazing Saddles is one of the most important movies of the 1970s, and it's one of the funniest movies of the 1970s. You could never make that today. And it's a great, stinging commentary of racism and misunderstanding and just small-mindedness and the kinds of things that we still battle today, right, in the world and in the United States. And it's so, and he handles it in such a lampoony, funny way. And you just imagine, I mean, what could you do? You could.
No, you have characters, you know, using the N-word liberally, even though the Cleavon Little character is the only smart person in the entire movie.
Right.
The Black Sheriff. And he plays off of that and mocks them without them knowing it, but that movie's not getting made in 2020.
There's a quick little aside story about that. You know, that was the role was written by Mel Brooks and Buck Henry and the other guys who were involved in that. Mm-hmm. And that was originally written for Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
And Richard Pryor could not get insured for the movie because of his drug use and because of his reputation. And Richard Pryor had written the movie as well.
He'd worked on it with him, yeah.
And so he said, well, you can't use me, but Cleavon Little would be perfect for this.
He was.
And he ended up being the perfect guy for it. But that's, I want to talk to Adam about this too, because what do you do? You know, I mean, it's like, how do you almost, anything you do or you say, you're going to be offending somebody. And there's just, it's a snowstorm now. Mm. Don't have any opinions. I guess we're just going to have to whitewash all of our opinions, no matter what they are.
How dare you.
Conservative or liberal. Forget about it. I can't. Nothing. No opinion.
I have some opinions and thoughts about that.
I would just like to drink water, because water is the only thing that has no taste. Let us now check in with Jen DeSalvo. What's happening on the roads and in the weather?